Hello and welcome to the Bumpsy Proceedings podcast. Every 2 months, we discuss an article or related subject from the current edition of the Baylor University Medical Center Proceedings, the peer-reviewed journal of Baylor Scott & White Health. The editor of Proceedings is Dr. James W. Fleshman, who is Chief of Surgery at Baylor University Medical Center and Professor of Surgery at Texas A&M College of Medicine, Dallas. The Proceedings podcast is also sponsored by Dr. Harry T. Papaconstantino, who holds the Glenn E. and Rita K. Roney Endowed Chair in Surgery and is Professor and Chair of the Department of Surgery at Baylor Scott & White Medical Center in Temple, Texas. The featured article for the September edition of Proceedings is Factors Affecting Perceived Caregiver Burden, Caregivers of Trauma Patients Discharged from the Intensive Care Unit. My guest today, Dr. Anne Marie Warren, is the corresponding author for the article. Information about the article can be found in the show notes. Anne Marie Warren, Ph.D., ABPP, is a board-certified licensed psychologist and the Research Center Director for Behavioral Health at Baylor Scott & White Research Institute. The focus of both her clinical and research work over the past 24 years has been on the psychological experience of individuals with significant medical conditions, including physical injury, organ transplantation, and chronic disease. In her clinical role as a licensed psychologist, she has provided psychological services in a variety of settings at Baylor Scott & White Health. Dr. Warren is a frequent lecturer at both regional and national conferences and has over 130 peer-reviewed publications. Dr. Warren, thanks for being here today to talk about your article.
Well, thanks for having me. It's a really important topic, and I'm excited to share it with people.
Tell me about the background of this study, and why did you choose this topic of research?
Historically, we've been looking here at Baylor University Medical Center at the patients who've been injured. So injured patients, early on in 2011, we started following patients who were admitted to our Level 1 Trauma Center. We wanted to see psychologically how those individuals did after injury, and we followed them for a year, and we looked at a lot of psychological outcomes. So as a researcher and also a licensed clinical psychologist who was seeing those patients, I was also involved with their family members. So on the unit, you would definitely be talking to family members, seeing, gosh, they're going through something too. And so it was important after realizing that really injury or illness is not just happening to the person, the patient, it's really happening to the entire family. So that led us into this next round of research where we're looking at what is the impact on the family member of the injured or ill individual in an intensive care unit. We were really fortunate in doing this work in that we got support from the Baylor Scott & White Foundation to do the original work with the looking at the psychological consequences on the patient admitted to a trauma unit, to a trauma ICU. And we had continued support from the Baylor Scott & White Foundation for doing this work with families.
Can you define for us what is a family caregiver?
A family caregiver is described not just as a biological relative of the person who's the identified patient, but a family caregiver is really defined as anyone, biological relative, close friend, anyone who's going to have a significant caregiving role, either at the time the person is hospitalized and or as they are recovering post-hospitalization.
What are the injuries or illnesses that are often seen in the ICU that often lead to the caregiver burden?
So what we know from the literature is that the amount of time someone spends in the intensive care unit, meaning the patient, so how many days they're in the intensive care unit, also how many days they might be on mechanical ventilation, that affects the outcome of the family caregiver. So it may not just be the severity of the injury that occurred to the patient. It may be other factors, right? So injury severity itself may not be a factor, but length of hospital stay and ventilation days may be. But what's interesting and what we were finding in this research is that it may be those non-modifiable factors, like you can't change how long they'll be in the hospital or how long they'll be on the vent. But we've got to look at what are the things we can change potentially that may affect caregiver burden and mental health consequences.
In your article, you talk about post-intensive care syndrome family.
Yeah.
This is something that many people are probably not aware of. Can you describe what this is and why it's important?
Yeah, this is a really important concept for both the patient as well as the family member. In 2010, the Society for Critical Care Medicine had a conference, and they met, and they were seeing this constellation of symptoms of mental health, cognitive, physical symptoms that were occurring in patients who had been in an intensive care unit. And these symptoms were not just happening in the intensive care unit. They were actually lasting long after the patient was discharged. So they kind of coined the term post-intensive care syndrome. This same group from Society for Critical Care Medicine also recognized that the family members were having a similar psychological response with a loved one in the intensive care unit. And that psychological response for families, which they, of course, call post-intensive care syndrome family, is looking at depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress symptoms, and complicated grief, especially if a family member dies in the intensive care unit. And so they also coined the term post-intensive care syndrome family. And I think it's really important for people to understand that there is a psychological response for family caregivers at the time of hospitalization, but the research shows that those psychological responses can continue well after discharge. So that's why our research is really trying to get at how can we maybe potentially look at what's going on early in the hospital setting and hopefully eventually provide interventions so that people won't have trouble further down the road after discharge.
What was the most important finding from your study?
Yeah, so we think the most important finding, and it was actually consistent with one previous article, was that when family members did not have a clear understanding of what was occurring to the patient, their rate of caregiver burden was increased and their rate of depression was increased. And when we talk about what was the inconsistency, so one of the measures we use asked family members a variety of questions about the patient. So what was the prognosis? Were they on certain medications? Those kinds of things. And what we found is that the less understanding they have of the experiences of the patient, the more psychological distress they experienced. And in particular, the biggest disconnect in our study appeared to be on prognosis. So there was a big difference in how much family members understood prognosis compared to what they had been told.
To put it in other terms, would this be they don't appreciate or understand the severity of the prognosis and just how long it's going to take for the patient to improve?
Well, I think it's really hard when you're in the middle of an immediate trauma, right? The immediate trauma, the ICU time is very overwhelming for people. It's very hard to take in information. And one of the things we found from the study was if they were receiving a lot of technical medical jargon, so to speak, that was really difficult for people to, that was the correlation. They were not getting the information in a way that they could understand it. And additionally, we found in our study that if people felt they were very emotionally upset when they were hearing that information from the clinical team, that was one of the disconnects as well. So it's really a combination of factors. But one of the things from the study that we have to think through is how can we provide information to the family caregivers who absolutely need that information? How can we provide accurate information, but in a way that people, the general layperson who's not in the medical field, can understand? Mm-hmm. And that is a challenging thing to do.
What can providers who see patients in the ICU take away from your article and use for their patients and their family caregivers?
Yeah, I think it goes back to communication, right? So we want to think about communication first and foremost, as I mentioned before. How can we give people information that's technically accurate, but in a way that they can understand? And thinking about communication 101, right? When we're just thinking about communication with another person, sometimes it's good to kind of have the person give back to you what they heard. I think, again, clinicians in the ICU, physicians, other healthcare providers, everyone is so busy and so pressed for time, and certainly appreciate that. But if they can take a few minutes and really just have the person try to repeat back, what did you hear me say? How can I answer more questions? You know, what else can I do to help you understand? And sometimes people need different forms of communication. It may not just be a conversation. People may need written information. Many hospitals, including our own, have ICU handbooks where we describe common ICU equipment, show pictures of ventilators. So people sort of understand, but it's trying to find different ways to make sure that that family caregiver is getting information that they understand, and also taking in cultural differences, obviously language differences. But beyond that, different people may take things in different ways. So you really have to have a person-centered approach to how we communicate this very important information.
If you were talking to someone who has a family member in the ICU, what advice would you give them at that point?
Yeah, so using my clinical hat in the ICU, when I've been working with family caregivers, a lot of it is just the basics. So some of it is just making sure, are you getting enough rest? I think the biggest thing is that family caregivers are typically, especially the primary caregivers, tend to be there 24/7. So if they're in the ICU 24/7, what are they not doing? They're not sleeping. They're not eating. They're not taking care of the things at home that are still happening, right? Like they still have to like walk the dog and pay bills and do these things. And so what we see is this, after several days or weeks of someone being in an intensive care unit, the family caregivers, of course, getting completely burned out. So we try very hard to encourage them to balance. The other thing I always tell family caregivers is look at your support systems, not just the support systems who are there with you in the ICU, but who are the support systems that can do things for you outside of the ICU. Often when there's a big trauma, people have all these people come out of the woodwork that want to help. And often wanting to help means showing up and sitting at the ICU with the family caregiver, which is great, but having family caregivers direct others to help for those other needs that still have to happen can be another valuable tool. And then again, validating their emotional response to what's happening, letting them know it's very normal to have all kinds of feelings after you have a loved one in the intensive care unit, especially if it's a life-changing injury, such as a traumatic brain injury, a spinal cord injury, where this may be brand new territory for them. So validating feelings, and again, providing education at the pace the individual is ready to receive it.
What can we do now for family caregivers?
Yeah, I think from the study, one thing that we recommend, and really from my clinical work as well, I think part of it is trying to identify who might be at risk, right? So we know some of the factors that put family caregivers at risk. We talked about how long the patients might be hospitalized if they're on mechanical ventilation. There's other factors that may put family caregivers at risk. Some of those are being female, being younger age, having kind of pre-morbid psychological mental health challenges. So if we identify people that we think, okay, this family caregiver is really having a hard time, that's where we want to try to tie them into some kind of resources. You know, in our hospital, we're fortunate at Baylor University Medical Center and other hospitals in our healthcare system to have psychologists, other mental health care professionals that can be there to support those families. ICU family support groups are another approach that many hospitals, including our own, have taken. There is a tremendous number of online support groups, especially post-COVID, that are available to family caregivers who are with family members who have had a significant injury or illness. So making sure that we've given resources for family members who may need that additional support is really important.
Is there any further research that you're planning with family caregivers?
Yeah, we actually have a lot of research going on that I'm excited about and things underway. We currently are doing what we call an observational study. So we are looking at our patients who are treated with ECMO. Those patients are individuals in the intensive care unit who are usually very, very ill, and they need an intervention to help either their heart and or lungs function while they're recovering. It would be, the best analogy I have is it's sort of similar to a kidney that needs dialysis to keep working. But because of the severity and how ill those individuals are, we're studying those individuals at the time they're in the hospital and through a period of 36 months to determine what are their psychological and cognitive outcomes from experiencing ECMO. In parallel, we are working with understanding better what's happening to the family caregivers of individuals who are treated with ECMO. Mm-hmm. So we have this observational data, and we're in the process of getting that data out in the literature, but we're finding that those family caregivers have higher than average rates of depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress. Their caregiver burden is high. Their healthcare quality of life is not as good. So now that we have the what we call the observational data, so we know this information, but it's more important to say, well, what are we going to do with it? Yes. Because we can study people for a long time, but it's most important, especially in my field, to think, okay, well, how can we help the mental health aspect? So we currently have a grant that is under review that if we get that grant, we would be able to, we're proposing a particular intervention to address post-traumatic stress in that in the family caregiver population, as well as subsequent depression and anxiety caregiver burden. So our take home of that would be, we know that there's additional stress for family caregivers. There has been some research looking at ICU diaries for family caregivers, and the research is kind of mixed to see if that's helpful. But we want to take interventions that we know work for treating post-traumatic stress, anxiety, depression, but we want to see if they work in family caregiver populations. And it was really terrific that we were able to have support to do this work with ECMO patients and their family caregivers. We had support both from Baylor Scott & White Foundation, and in particular from the CVRRC arm of the foundation to do this work.
I know that'll be a fascinating study.
I'm so
helpful.
Excited about it. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. If it gets funded.
Yes. Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Dr. Warren, thanks so much for talking with us about caregiver burden. I wish you the best in your work as a researcher and a clinical psychologist.
Well, thanks so much for having me, and I hope that people find this helpful.
I'm sure they will. That concludes this episode. Be on the lookout for the next episode from Bumpsy Proceedings, scheduled to be published in November.